We're back with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be in the company of Sir Harold Evans, known in the publishing trade as Harry Evans. Before I forget, you said in a very passing way you were sacked at the Times, and yet that is one of the reasons that you've been able to do so many things. Isn't this ability to rise from what looks like a terrible event at one point of your life to then say, okay, well, I got knocked down on that and get up and do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. You wouldn't be Sir Harold Evans had you not been fired from the Times.
Oh, it was a benefit which came very well disguised at the time.
Well, and isn't that part of what you're telling me in the monumental book, They Made America, and in the TV as well?
Well, I probably would have still been knighted because I got it mainly for the journalism I'd done, which was based campaigning for thalidomide children, getting compensation for people who were deformed by a negligent drug company. I got that for rather than for anything since I came to the United States. But actually, I've loved coming to the United States, and unless I'd been fired, this is where the benefit loses its disguise, or attains its disguise. Unless I'd been fired, I wouldn't be in the United States sitting in this room in Atlanta with you. I wouldn't have, my wife wouldn't have edited Vanity Fair and The New Yorker. I wouldn't have been president of Random House. Oh, a whole catalogue of ifs, and I'm actually glad it happened.
Exactly.
I also feel better. I mean, technically I resigned. Accurately, I was sacked, but I could have made a fight of it. I'm glad I didn't, for the reasons I described in my book, Good Times, Bad Times, that there comes sometimes when I might have been prepared to make compromises to preserve myself that would have shamed me.
And that puts you in league with the kind of people of whom you're talking when you're talking about innovation. There is something, I think it is the Buddha who Joseph Campbell says had three don'ts. One should eschew, I love the word, one should eschew
lust,
fear, and social conformity.
I find it hard to forgo the first.
Well, be that as it may, that's what Joseph Campbell said, okay. The Buddha said. But this business about social conformity, yeah. I don't think
that's
we think
why,
about
that's
that.
That's why Buddhism is, as many other religions,
I admire work in process. I admire the Buddhists a tremendous amount, and it's horrible when they're persecuted around the world, as they are, for a peaceful, wonderful people, and a wonderful religion, too.
And isn't this notion that we should eschew social conformity one that is hard to get your hands around?
Well,
sometimes.
It is, because some social conformity is very necessary. We expect people to behave reasonably and not become violent. We expect people to honor their neighbors and love their wives. That's all social conformity. Depends what your moral values are. What my guiding thing in moral values is, I'd like to think that the moral values I have don't consist of imposing my will on other people. And so when we have election talk about this, that, and the other, I think it's important to remember that moral values are not a single commodity like something in a supermarket. I think the essence of it is as Kant said it, the true ethics is to treat everybody as you wish to be treated yourself. The moral imperative, and that's what I like to think of, is the true moral value. Talking about failure, it is true to say that most of the people in They Made America have been failures. Fail time and time again. And, I mean, Edison made the incandescent light bulb 3,000 times before it worked. Henry Ford said, I keep trying to do the impossible. Pierre Omidyar with eBay, and Herbert Boyer with trying to create artificial insulin. It kept failing. They're trying to clone a gene. And I think it's amazing that people keep going. So they're not keeping lust and social conformity. Don't come into those things. Why do people go on? I think there's partly vanity. We don't like to be defeated. We'd like to solve a problem. Also, I think altruism comes into many innovators. And I'm very, very impressed by the number of people who actually give the lie to the idea that all people are consumed by greed. You know, there's Giannini who invented banking for popular people. He said, no man owns a fortune, it owns him. And Sam Colt, whose gift to the world is somewhat arguable, the six-gun revolver, he said, money is trash. And I find this is a moral thing to debate. And I'm not, I will be denounced for some kind of Panglossian. but honestly, let me just put this proposition to you.
Excuse me.
I mean, just tell me whether you think there's something in it. The people I've written about over 200 years who've been guided by some altruistic or intellectual curiosity rather than making money made fewer mistakes than those who went simply for money, because if you go simply for money, you're likely to end up in a scandal.
I was struck by how often in your telling, and obviously your perspective may be part of that, but how often you are able to quote these people saying something negative about money, or that it was not the driver, that it was something else, that it was, you know, and almost inevitably it was solving a problem. It was seeing a problem that other people, problem or opportunity, but frequently a problem, and then doing essentially whatever was necessary to solve that problem.
Exactly. If your objective is to make money, if that's just the simple objective, and I'm not going to decry making money, we all need to survive, etc., then you're prepared to cut corners, because that's the only guideline, it's making money. If, on the other hand, you're trying to solve an intellectual problem, you know it's useless to cut the corner in an intellectual problem. Or if you want to benefit mankind, there's no point in doing something which aggravates pollution or whatever it may be.
I'm trying to answer your question as you are directing it. It seemed to me time and again that the people, that, and maybe this is because it was you writing and editing They Made America, that many of these people were driven not by money, but by a sense of they could create something new in the democratic tradition. And it seemed that that was a theme. Now, again, it may be because you picked them and you were drawn to them, but that seemed also to be an imperative in this search for what is it about innovation.
Oh, I think there's no question in my mind that some of them were distinctly motivated by a democratic sense. Let's just take for a second Giannini. Travelling in his mother's womb on the first transcontinental railway, arrives in San Francisco.
Really, truly, this isn't metaphorically.
He was a fetus. And he's born in California. His father's murdered. His mother goes, sells fruit and vegetable, and he helps. So he's coming from hardship and difficulty. When he marries somebody and he finally gets a seat on a tiny bank, a board director, tiny bank, and their policy is to lend money to people who don't need it, i.e. the rich, and not to give it to people who do need it, i.e. the poor who want a mortgage. And it's a marvellous moment when somebody comes in who's expecting a baby and they want a loan of $100, which the banks wouldn't normally give, it's too small, and he gives it. He says, I'm investing in the future. He wanted to popularize banking out of a democratic instinct coming from his own experience, because he'd seen what it was like to be a little person, and he forever after was on the side of the little man. That is a genuine democratic impulse. I think Henry Ford, before he went crazy and nasty in his old age, was inspired by Emerson. When he read the passage, it's interesting, his copy of Emerson, which he kept all the time.
That will be Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Ralph Waldo Emerson. He's marked where he says, if you don't give back, you're corrupted by worms. And that's at the time he was reading that, when he decided to give $5 a day to the workers, because he'd also seen how assembly line was really making automatons of them. And so he gave back and was, of course, denounced by the Wall Street Journal for a criminal activity. And Salzburg on the New York Times said, this man is utterly dangerous to society. So the democratic impulse was there in Ford when he did the Model T as well, of course, previous to that, because he could have made more money initially by continuing to build what became the Cadillac motor car rather than the Model T Ford. Now, it's obviously, it gives me a good feeling to think this is true, but I think there's evidence for it.
This is Sir Harold Evans, and so I don't have to interrupt Bill Russell. I will take us to a break. We'll all be back in just a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. We invite you to be with us, too.